Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime.
And welcome aboard, everybody, to another edition of Midrats. We greatly appreciate you taking time today to join us. And if you are with that esteemed cohort that is with us live, if you are so inclined, you can scroll to the bottom of the show page. That's where you'll find the chat room that we'll be monitoring during the course of the show. If you have some observations you'd like to share, that's a great place to do it. Or if there's a question you would like for us to direct to our guest, and it doesn't look like we're heading in that direction, if you put that in the chat room, and if it's a concise, good point, we'll be happy to bring it in and ask it for you. And if you have to take off and take care of some business and you want to catch up on what you missed, you can always come back and get the full archive over at Blog Talk Radio, or just take a couple minutes and subscribe to the free podcast over at iTunes or Stitcher. Now let's dive back into the show. And for those that have been with us over the years, you'll recognize today's topic. We've touched on it obliquely here and there with the likes of Commander B.J. Armstrong and others. And that has to do with the methods and the priorities we have in educating the future officers of our Navy and Marine Corps that are coming through Naval ROTC and the United States Naval Academy. And as we've talked about and I've written about through the years, there's a policy of a bias towards STEM majors, science, technology, engineering, and math. And it throws off some sparks for a variety of reasons that we'll cover during the course of the show. But that puts in a highly technical bias in the college education of our junior officers and has repercussions down through the years up to and including, believe it or not, who gets selected to command aircraft carriers. Yes, people in the middle age are held accountable for what they did or did not study when they were 20 years old. But anyway, the core of the question is this really not just the best approach to the college experience for our future officers, but is this in the best interest of our Navy and Marine Corps, who needs to focus on building effective leaders for their sailors and Marines? We brought on today a great subject matter expert, because he's a lot closer to the question than we are. For the full hour, we have U.S. Naval Academy Midshipman First Class Kirk Wolf. And for those that are at the show page, you can find a link to his recent Proceedings Today article titled Rethinking the Naval Academy Curricula. And we're going to use some of the points in there as a kickoff point for the conversation. Kirk is originally from Morristown, Tennessee. He is majoring in political science at the Naval Academy. And when he graduated here on 25 May, he will join the surface warfare community. Kirk, really appreciate you coming on today. Welcome to Midraps.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be on here. Didn't expect much of a response from this, but obviously touched a nerve with some people. So thank you so much for hosting me.
You're welcome, and congratulations on stepping forward in writing. I wish more people had, and I hope you keep up the habit. It can be addictive in its own little way. And I thought, you know, speaking of writing, just as a scene set for today, talk about what brought you to the point that you said, you know what, this is my last semester at the Naval Academy. I got to get ready for final exams. I want to write a article on the contentious topic of STEM versus non-STEM education.
Well, that's a great question. I would say that I want to preface this answer with saying that the current Academy structure isn't broken. There's nothing inherently wrong with what the Academy is or how it's educating its students and future leaders. I'm not saying that the Navy's bound to collapse in 20 years if we don't change the curriculum right now. And that's obviously evidenced by when you look at the national rankings of the Naval Academy, we're up there with Vanderbilt, Wake Forest, and I'm proud of that. The entire point of my article is just that it could be better. The curriculum could be better, and that's always going to be true. And I'm just seeking to find that better solution with my limited perspective. I appreciate you calling me a subject matter expert, but I wouldn't say that I am on really anything at all. So just for my 4 years having gone through the academy just recently, what I think could be done better with the curriculum, and really why I wanted to weigh in was it all started with a bit of a gripe that I had about the internship process, which was included in the article. That was really the touchstone of everything. Whenever I sat down, I was like, why is it that humanities majors, which make up 30 to 35% of all upperclassmen, why are there only 8 internships available for all of us, but then there's a myriad of internships available for STEM majors? And why do we, humanities and social sciences majors, have to give up our one block of leave in order to be an intern whenever the STEM majors, for the most part, that counts as their training and they don't have to give up their leave? And it just sort of started me down the rabbit hole of the disparity between STEM and humanities, social sciences at the academy and in the Navy, and why that was. And I started to look at different imbalances between the two. And at the end of the day, that just seemed really counterintuitive to me, as I said in the article, that I believe if we were to go and restart the academy right now from scratch and have a total historical vacuum, that you would not be emphasizing STEM to such a high degree for our officers, because in a large way, that's maybe not the best way to be educating our officers. Now, there definitely does need to be a STEM background. I know for going into surface warfare, we're all going to have to be technical experts on a bunch of different systems and things along those lines. However, I just think there's a slight bit of overkill, maybe a few classes that could be maybe changed, or the STEM requirement could be decreased, either in the total STEM hours that are required to be taken by humanities majors, or STEM majors that are required to graduate from the academy itself. I just do not believe that the current structure makes as much sense as it possibly could. So like I said, it's not broken. I'm not saying that there's anything disastrously wrong. I just believe that it could be better, and it could be better in this way.
Well, I thought one of the aspects of your article kind of pointed out, right now you're saying 30 to 35% of the students of the academy are STEM majors, and you're not proposing wiping out the STEM programs. You're proposing that the number be altered so that maybe 60% or 55 or 60% are humanities, or what we call in some places arts and sciences majors, as opposed to STEM majors. And so really, it's you're saying go from 70-30 to 60-40, but in the reverse order. So you would encourage many people who attend the academy to continue to major in engineering and physics and chemistry and programs like that, I gather.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't even make it a hard requirement to have, like, say, 60% humanities major. I'm just saying soften that hard requirement that currently exists of the 65% STEM majors to just give people more of an option, or to de-emphasize the massive importance of STEM that is currently placed by the curriculum, if you get what I'm saying. So it's just sort of softening it to allow people to sort themselves into other fields that maybe aren't STEM related, because it's just, like I said, it's a bit overkill, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I don't think things have changed too much since I was a midshipman in the mid-1980s. I experienced a lot of pressure because I started off in a STEM major. It absolutely hated every minute of the day because I just had zero interest in what I was grinding my head against. So I shifted after 2 years in a non-STEM, and there was much gnashing of teeth and rending of clothes. Not from anybody else in my life except for the Navy. I was Naval ROTC. And if you could, take for a minute and talk about what it's like as a midshipman, and the conversations and the discussions that go forward about why you need to major in STEM or what the advantages of being a STEM major versus being, say, a political science major?
Right. So a lot of people believe that you can just learn political science through a book, or you can just go read some literature, and that's the same as getting an English degree. But that's completely not true in really any way. It's about learning a way of thinking, learning a way of analyzing those different subjects. And that was one thing that a lot of the comments on the article said that I would like to address. Quite a few commenters said, oh, you can just learn from reading. And that's really true of anything. There are a plethora of autodidacts in every single field. The man who designed the Eiffel Tower never had formal schooling and taught himself engineering and architecture. Watt was never schooled in electricity or anything along those lines. Even Steve Irwin never took a biology class. You can teach yourself anything in a way, and that's not unique for political science or English or history. It's about learning a way of thinking and in a method of analyzing the world that I think is valuable and useful for an officer. Because like I said in the article, the Navy is a human business. It's a lot about dealing with other people. And I think by understanding the history of different people or the history of ourselves or by reading literature, you can gain a greater understanding of other people, some emotional intelligence, perhaps you could term it, that is really beneficial for dealing with your sailors, Marines, or what have you. And as far as the conversations that go on at the Academy for why you need to major in STEM, I think it does stem from the requirement that of 65% that the midshipmen believe that because there's this hard line that 65% of majors should be STEM, that is actually the right way, and that everything else is sort of an exception to the rule. Like, sure, we'll let you major in English or political science, but you're just an exception to this STEM priority that we have, and that makes you lesser, which I don't think is true. And that's not the overriding opinion, but there are certainly people that do believe that here, and you'll hear that communicated even in the hall. So then another thing with regards to the balance of humanities versus STEM at the Academy that I think is a really salient point to note is that if you're a humanities major, you're required to take 45 to 51 hours of STEM classes at a minimum in order to graduate with your humanities and social sciences degree. Yet a STEM major is required to at most take 24 hours of humanities classes. And I just think that those two numbers could be a bit closer and that we would all be better for it if it were maybe 35-30 or something along those lines. There's just a balance that could be reached, I think, where people would be better imbued with the skills that they need to lead either in the short term or in the long term, command, citizenship, government, all that great stuff from the mission, if we could bring those numbers closer together. Like, even I believe that now going to be a West Coast sailor, I wish that I had a class on strategic studies in the South China Sea, and maybe if I'd had one less weapons engineering course, that could have happened. So there's just a lot of different ways that I think that we could tweak the curriculum to give better skills in that the humanities would bring to these STEM majors at the Academy. And I'm not saying that I'm better than they are, that they are better than me. We're just better than each other at different things. And I just believe that bumping up that 24 hours humanities, social sciences requirement for the STEM majors would help them in a big way. I mean, it really would. So that's sort of where I'm at as far as the conversations in the hall, the different hard requirements the Academy has, and things along those lines.
One of the questions that I always am confronted with when I talk to people about majoring in engineering or other technical fields is the question of how they learn how to express their thoughts well. And I know this from, among other things, my father was an engineer who always felt that one of the things that was deficient in his education was writing courses to help him learn how to express the ideas he had more clearly and coherently. Is there a program, as far as you know, at the Naval Academy or under which people in the STEM programs take writing and other courses to help them express themselves?
That's a great question. And there are, during your plebe year, there are two required English courses that you take. And that's so far in the rear view that, it obviously did help me out. But I think that a later requirement, like maybe a first class year, so senior year writing class, would be extremely beneficial. And I would say that what I've heard from a bunch of different officers over in Luce Hall, which is the professional development building at the academy, is that the top complaint from the fleet for academy graduates is a lack of communication skills, which really feeds into what you were just saying. And that's sort of stunning to me personally, because when you look at the curriculum, there's not a standardized level of proficiency in communication that is required from academy graduates. It's sort of assumed that through your 24 hours, if you're a STEM major, through your 24 hours in humanities, that you'll just sort of pick that up through maybe your elective history class you take your sophomore year. But I don't think that that is sufficient, as evidenced by that common complaint coming back. Big thing that I would say that makes that even more stunning is that when I was back in Tennessee, I was gunning for a community college degree from a local community college in Morristown called Walter State. And in order to gain my degree, my 2-year degree from Walter State, the community college, we were required to take a communications class where we gave 4 or 5 speeches and wrote a bunch of different reports that were sort of simulated as if it was going to a superior in a business or something along those lines. And that standard is universal across Tennessee for all community college and college graduates. You have to take that communications course or something in that vein. And the academy has nothing like that. And I believe that it's sort of stunning that community college graduates in Tennessee are expected or are held to a common standard of communication proficiency, and academy graduates are not. And it is true that you do gain some communication proficiency. You pick it up in these different courses, but I think that there should just be a hard standard line, maybe a first-year speech class that could replace something like we all take what we call Legos, a course where you do a engineering project. It's a 1-credit course. So you take 2 hours per week. You spend basically building a mini robot out of Legos. And I just believe that you would be better served to have taken a communication course right before you're shoved off in the fleet to speak to your division or to speak in front of a command or to write fitness reports. I think that a verbal and written communications course could be added to your first year or something along those lines. Or if you were to just, like I said, bump up the overall humanities hours, you would get even more of that piecemeal communications education that you get from taking an English course where you need to write and express yourself, or a political science course where you need to speak and debate. And that sort of feeds into an article that I cited in my proceedings piece from Admiral Richardson, where he said that intellectual debate, reading and writing are the critical components to making our Navy more powerful in the future, and that we absolutely need to be increasing these, yet the academy curriculum doesn't really reflect that. Even though that sentiment is echoed by Defense Secretary James Mattis and Admiral Stavridis over at the Naval Institute. So there's a lot of different things where there's this disconnect between what the fleet in general is agreeing is important for officers, what the leadership is saying that we need to increase, and what the academy is doing. And like I said, the academy, once again, is not broken. I'm not here to tear down my institution. I'm proud to see my school up there with the Ivy Leagues, and I believe that's its rightful place. Once again, it could just always be tweaked to be a little bit better. That pursuit of perfection is maybe another thing that has thankfully been imbued in our academy graduates, that we always want to just make it a little bit better. And that's one way that I think we could, to have that kind of communication course or communication training.
It's funny, you just quoted from what was going to be my next question. So we're in sync here. No, that's all right. I want to riff off it for a little bit, because you brought up something good. In the course of this discussion, I think one of the unfortunate aspects of it is your article, you can tell in the discussions we've had here and with other people, it's been about from your perspective, it's making the Naval Academy better. from my perspective, the discussion has always been, you know, how do we better prepare our young men and women for the challenges they're going to experience as junior officers, and more importantly, what the Navy is going to expect for them to do in that role, and are we injecting into the system certain biases that may not be reflective in what's actually required out there. Institutions are historically hard to steer. And the phrase you use, disconnect, I think is right on board that, because we may have a situation where people are letting their own personal feelings, and the old phrase, never read the comments section, might apply here, but some of the less constructive comments you hear on the topic, it's almost like this, I hated what I did and it was painful, so I want other people to feel the same hate and discomfort that I did, as opposed to looking at ultimately what is the core mission of the Naval Academy and Naval ROTC programs. And OCS is kind of a different creature because the education is already done by the time they get to us. You know, where is that disconnect from the big rush as we moved into coal and steam and that huge engineering challenge to a more nuanced world where we have, on one hand, our senior leaders asking for a certain type of intellectual raw material, but the institutions are resisting moving in that direction. Has there been any conversations about that disconnect that even predates the 2016 article? I can go back to shortly after 9/11 in 2001. I was sitting there with a map of Central Asia trying to explain to my officers where Afghanistan was relative to its neighbors. Nobody was worried too much about PV equals NRT, but I did have to order Hopkirk's The Great Game and hand out to my senior lieutenants. You know, what is the conversation in the background about if there is a disconnect and a way to restructure to better serve the core mission of what we're trying to do?
Yeah, I haven't heard that conversation being had, and maybe that's one of the benefits, is that we're having it now and we can start this path maybe in a few years that something might change. Like you said, institutions are hard to steer and slow to change. But it's funny that you bring up the example from post 9/11 of a map of Central Asia and all. And this is, once again, this isn't a knock on the academy, particularly because these were plebes. So they were 18-year-old kids fresh out of the American education system. So maybe this is more of a knock on our national education system. However, I hosted when I was a junior and senior, a biweekly international relations conversation with my fourth class midshipmen, so the freshmen, trying to give them some of that situational awareness that I felt that they were lacking, because I'm not just sitting here taking pot shots at the curriculum. I've actually been trying to change this from within. I've been trying to help the fourth class for multiple generations now learn what they need to know. And what I did is I sent out an email to the freshmen and I said, hey, next Thursday, we're going to be having a conversation during training time about a current international relations topic. So start reading up on the news and we'll talk about it next week. And then we all came into the passageway and they sat down and I go, all right, so who has an opinion on what we should be doing in Syria right now? And probably 75% of them raised their hands, like 30 out of 40 raised their hands and said they did have an opinion on what we should do in Syria back in, this was, I guess, early or late 2016 maybe. And then I said, all right, so how many of you can place Syria on a map? And then it was maybe five or six raised their hand to that question. So it was really stunning to me, and I explained to them that it's almost inappropriate for you as a future leader, or even you're looked to as a current leader, even as a midshipman, I would say, that you have an opinion on what we should be doing in Iraq, Iran, or Afghanistan, or in Syria, but you can't even place it on a map. That's a different kind of disconnect that I think is almost inappropriate. And I think that the Academy should be educating our leaders, our future naval leaders, to have that background knowledge, because it's almost embarrassing if they don't. And I'm not sure, this wasn't with seniors who are about to go in the fleet, so I don't know how, if that changes over 4 years, maybe through some of their side classes. But I would venture to say that for a lot of them, it did not change, and it wouldn't have if we hadn't sat down and had that conversation. So it's sort of another thing about being in the Navy, even as a midshipman, but especially as an officer, is it's almost like one of our duties is acting as miniature diplomats for the United States. For example, last summer I had the amazing opportunity, the Naval Academy sent me on a foreign exchange cruise to Ireland. And when I reported to the Naval base in Haulbowline, Ireland, I was able to have an educated conversation about things like Irish history and the politics of Ireland, because I had sat down and read a book before I went there about the 1916 revolution, and went and read through Irish history just on a base level, just so I'd have that understanding. And I'd also had some other minor training in that area. And then when I reported to my ship that I was doing my foreign exchange cruise on, guess what its name was? The James Joyce. They're huge on their literature. They're very proud over there of their culture, their literature, and their history. And in order to be a successful miniature diplomat, as I just like to term us, you need to have that understanding of culture. And I actually heard from one of the officers on my ship that when they went to Cherbourg and met some Americans, they did like a bridge-to-bridge almost exchange, where they sent their officers over to the U.S. ship, and then we sent our officers over to the Irish ship, were shocked with the lack of knowledge of even where they were in France, but let alone what was going on in the area, because they started to just have that natural conversation. I'm not exactly sure what the circumstances were, but they had some sort of conversation along those lines, and they were shocked at how little one of the American officers knew. And so in order to put on that face for the United States around the world that we should have, you need to have that background knowledge. And that was the entire sum of these Irish officers' experience then with anyone from the U.S. Navy until I, a 21-year-old midshipman, just happened to get sent over there. And I'm not saying that, like, oh, I just reversed the entire country of Ireland's opinion of the United States, but there were officers on that ship and on other ships that had a negative opinion because we didn't have that geopolitical knowledge imbued in our officer. So I also on a personal level, it's just nice to be able to go around the world and relate to these individuals' turf and understand where they're coming from, like I've said. So that was sort of, you know, a rabbit hole, but in a big way, I think that it's important to have that understanding, both for when you're in front of your division and explaining why we're doing what we're doing and understanding what we're doing, and also when you go and meet people from other navies, which is a huge part of being in the Navy. So, yeah, that's sort of where I'm at as far as that goes.
You know, I was just looking at the academic majors offered at the Naval Academy, and I noticed that among those that are not there would be management and leadership. And I know there's a leadership component of your education there. Can you kind of talk about what that part of your education, the academy, is? And would there be room for a major in management or leadership as part of the curriculum?
So I actually am not sure if there's a need for a specific leadership major, because I really actually feel like in everything that I've done at the academy, all the trainings that I did through Plebeer, and then continuously throughout my 4 years, we've constantly been reminded about how this relates to leadership and what it takes to be a good leader. So I really almost feel like every academy graduate has a basically a minor in leadership, just based on how much it's emphasized even outside of the 3 or 4 leadership classes that we're all required to take. And a lot of the leadership classes sort of get a little bit knocked. It's like, oh, it's obvious that you should treat your people well and things along those lines. But I think that maybe midshipmen sort of discount those classes to an extent because it's so emphasized in the hall by other midshipmen, by the junior officers, about how things relate to leadership. So I'm not sure maybe if there's a leadership major that would be necessary, because like I said, it's just a cornerstone of what we're doing here. That's one thing that I think is really good about the academy curriculum and the academy culture, is that there's just so much emphasis on being a good leader and being a good person in that way. Obviously, it's not 100% successful. Nothing is, but I think that perhaps a major wouldn't be the most pertinent thing to add or best way to improve the curriculum. But as far as what was said before with the don't read the comments, and the majors conversation, is that in one of the comments, which I totally don't follow that rule, I read every single comment. So for your listeners, if one of you were the ones who were commenting on the article, please know that you've been heard. And one of the comments that kept popping up on different formats, whether it was on Facebook or on the article's website itself, was that midshipmen need to be focused and trained in, quote, war fighting, and that they need to be learning about war fighting. And I guess that I must have missed that major on major selection night freshman year. I'm sorry that I missed the war fighting major. But if you do look at the 25 majors offered, none of them are war fighting. And that's because, like I said, a lot of it is imbued in different ways. And that it's just really, it's almost a impossible standard that a lot of commenters are wanting. Train war fighters. It's command, citizenship, and government is the mission of the academy. And if anything, if there is a war fighting major, I would argue that it would be philosophy or English. I mean, think about in the Hanoi Hilton, how many lives the philosophy of Epictetus saved alone through Vice Admiral Stockdale's leadership. He cited his studies in philosophy that as a reason why he was able to remain so strong and save so many lives through his leadership. I mean, he's got a statue right outside of our leadership building at the academy. And as far as like English goes, one of the ways that Vice Admiral Lawrence, who is another person who's, I think, one of three academy graduates who were honored with a statue, Vice Admiral Lawrence, one of the things that kept him alive was poetry, actually. He composed the state poem of Tennessee while a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton and being tortured. And that poem still to this day, he's the poet laureate of Tennessee, and this poem still stands as our state poem. And then if you're looking at another example of not majoring in war fighting or not studying war fighting, but still ending up being a warrior, I would Admiral McRaven, the great Navy SEAL admiral who has been, who is an excellent communicator, his speech at the University of Texas at Austin's graduation has been shared millions of times, and the speech about making your bed, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen it or heard it. And what did he major in as an undergraduate in Austin, Texas? He was a journalism major. You don't have to be studying specifically war fighting or anything like that. Like I said, it's sort of a non-existent major in order to be a war fighter or a good leader or a good officer. It's just there are a lot of different ways that the humanities and social sciences prepare you to be an effective communicator, which is huge for being an officer, and outside of being an officer, like when you're looking 40 years down the line, like they say, it's not the next 4 years at the academy, it's about the next 40. 40 years down the line, you want to have good communicators carrying the standard for the academy and for the Navy. I mean, what does it say if you have an academy graduate, introduces an academy graduate, and he or she gets up and is not able to communicate effectively? That doesn't reflect well upon anyone, and that means that he was not done a service in that regard. So, that's how I'd respond to the sort of major comments that I saw in the article. The common criticism of what I said was about how it's not related to war fighting, when in a big way it is. I don't really understand how understanding the how a history course in the Middle East is completely pertinent to becoming a war fighter in the Middle East, and it's also pertinent to just being a better person with a more worldly understanding. So that's where I stand as far as the majors conversation goes.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting thing in the comments section too, because when that came up, I was just having visuals. You know, if you're going to have a major in war fighting, the visual that came to mind is you hand it off to somebody like Secretary Mattis, and you would need a front end loader for all the books that he would throw in there, but it would be philosophy, political science, international relations. There'd probably be a double major requirement in one of a selected group of foreign languages to fluency. But yeah, if we wanted to do that, I think you'd get a lot of people interested in it. Maybe call it something different than war fighting. But I think you've broadly outlined a thumbnail of an interesting bit of study. And let's talk about that hostility to some of the ideas that you brought up, or the hostility to non-STEM majors, because something in your article really hit close to home. And in it is the kernel. And, you know, many times when you talk about things like this, you talk about the what and the so what, but what next? You know, what action can be made? What can be done to improve things for the benefit of not just the Navy as a whole, but for the institution and the midshipmen who are going to be our future ensigns and second lieutenants? And I think there is institutional hostility to it. And earlier in the show, you mentioned something that you also touch on the article. I would really like for you to outline, because I don't see another word besides hostility there. Describe again, and I speak as somebody who has one child about to graduate college, who's your age, another one who's about to join that journey. I know quite a bit about internships and what they do. And describe the Naval Academy's institutional rules, requirements, and the different way it teaches, it treats STEM internships vice non-STEM internships, because I think it speaks volumes.
Right. So that sort of institutional bias is reflected in the total number of internships. There are far more internships per STEM major than there are per humanities major, as I said earlier. And then we humanities majors are also expected to sacrifice our leave, reside in Bancroft Hall, commute ourselves, and parking is not even provided. So like I said in the article, you're going to be commuting 3 to 4 hours per day, every single day, starting at before even dawn, probably 5 a.m. you'd have to leave the academy to get to the Pentagon on time. I just really believe that in the best interest of the academy, the Navy, and everyone involved, the midshipmen themselves, that the only time midshipmen are going to D.C. should not be to go to a party at Georgetown or a shenanigans happy hour. We should be sending midshipmen to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, the power center of the world, where we have so many different graduates in high positions. We should leverage that connection, those connections that we have in the city, to better educate our future leaders, give them some insight, and sort of lessen these hard requirements of things like remaining in Bancroft Hall for the internship period, because like I said, that's a massive burden that you're placing on these individuals. I was lucky enough to be chosen for one of the Pentagon internships last year, and I did not take it because of those requirements, and I ended up just going home and taking my last leave, spending it with my family. And even if I had had to give up leave, I still would have done the internship. If I had been allowed to live close to the Pentagon, even out of my own pocket, I would have still done that if that was an availability, but it wasn't. And that was another comment that a lot of people said. They said, oh, it sounds like this midshipman is bitter. He didn't get an internship. I did, and I feel like maybe I would have been better educated or have a better collegiate experience if I had had that internship. Now, that's not to say I haven't had a ton of other experiences at the academy through the academy that have well prepared me. I absolutely have. I've been sent overseas to study in Germany for a portion. I got to go on the foreign exchange cruise. I have been provided with amazing opportunities. But like I said at the top of the show, there's just a way that it can be tweaked to be a little bit better, and it wouldn't even cost the academy much at all, if anything. We really should be leveraging our connections in the city as an institution to give our midshipmen a foot in the door in the State Department, the Pentagon, and other places around the city. And the academy is the hostility from I wouldn't say the academy, that there hasn't been any hostility from the institution itself towards me that I've noticed, but for this article. But what I will say is that the hostility that you saw in the comments, and you saw a lot of the almost personal attacks in the comments, is because a lot of people take this challenge of the status quo of STEM primacy to be a personal attack on them for majoring in STEM, and that is absolutely not my intent. That's not what's happening at all. I'm still saying that we need a lot of STEM majors at the academy. I said that in my article. I'm just saying that softening the hard requirement and then balancing out the benefits given to each respective field of study, I'm not saying decrease any STEM benefits that they have. I don't think that anybody should be required to stay in Bancroft Hall and commute so far, or that anybody should have to sacrifice their leave for an internship, or that anybody should be failed in those ways at all. I think that the bare minimum thing is to at least balance out the well-deserved and common sense standards and benefits that are given to interns that are going for STEM. I just think that is a common sense thing to do, to allow both STEM and humanities intern majors to have access to the same number of internships and to have the same housing requirements and things along those lines, and leave requirements. It shouldn't be the case that all the humanities majors are taking no leave in order to get that modicum of work experience, while the STEM majors are getting to go on leave and what have you. That's just sort of where I think that should stand. The hostility in the comments and along that line from a lot of people who were weighing in on the other side of my article, that hostility didn't really hurt my feelings in any way. Like, I'm a big boy. I can take that. My tweet summer detailers have said far worse things to me than those individuals. So I'm not too concerned with the hostility in that respect, but it was almost, like I said earlier, it was like two ships passing in the night. I'm saying, hey, you know, we should be treating these two fields as equal, and that there's a lot of ways that STEM majors could be better benefited through having a bit more humanities in their curriculum. And then these individuals were, like I was saying earlier, saying, no, we need to be studying war fighting. Well, there's no physics. A physics major isn't inherently a better war fighter than an English major. That's not, it's like a weird false dichotomy that's going on here. That's not really what we're debating. So like I said, two ships passing in the night in that respect. Just on the main issue, though, that it's just a questioning of the status quo to an extent is going to elicit that kind of a response, particularly with an institution as revered and as Academy and Naval RATC. It's just going to have that response, but that's perfectly fine. And I welcome debate. I would love somebody to write a rebuttal to my article in to send it into the Naval Institute for publication as well. That would be great if we could have this dialogue. That's the entire point of what I'm saying. We need to have constructive debate. That's the cornerstone of what I believe humanities education gives you. I've written two previous articles for the Naval Institute for Proceedings magazine, and those also got responses. And I was thrilled to have somebody not only read my article, but write back and give their perspective, because that's the entire point. I don't want to just talk to a wall here or talk to people that are angry and sort of missing the point. I want to have a constructive debate and figure out the best way that we can reform the academy curriculum so that future generations can be better prepared, because that's just in all of our best interests. It'll be in our best interest as a nation, as a whole, to have leaders, officers, and civilians from the academy that are imbued with the best possible ideals, principles, and understanding that we can give them. And I think this is a path to do that. So I would say that my, based on what you said earlier, the question is like, well, what can we do? I would say my three big suggestions would be balance the STEM versus humanities major hour requirement. What, like I said earlier, it's 51 hours of STEM requirement for humanities majors. It's 24 hours for humanities requirement for STEM majors. Bring those numbers closer together. I would say increase the internships available for all humanities and social sciences majors, and bring those, that the second one is the internship piece, to bring those internships together in terms of requirements and allowances. And then finally, I would say that we should soften the 65% hard requirement of 65% STEM majors, maybe drop the hard requirement to 40%. And the case may be that even if we drop the hard requirement to 40%, that it still would be 60 or 50%, but it would at least give midshipmen and others that sort of understanding that, A, it's okay to major not in STEM. It's perfectly fine and a good thing. And B, you don't need to feel pressured to go into a STEM major to meet that requirement to get to bump the numbers up to 65%. So those would be my three tangible things that we can do to improve. And I would ask that if somebody were to write a rebuttal, to elaborate as to why those three suggestions would not benefit the academy curriculum, midshipmen, and the country as a whole.
And we have a caller. Charles, you are on the line with Kirk.
Hi, Kirk. This is Charles, obviously. I heard you comment earlier about being off Cherbourg and being off Ireland. And I was in my four deployments. I always saw my jails get drug off because we'd have NDU or NWC professors go on a crash course in world history. Would we be better served by having those professors put out like a cruise reading list, like the classic high school summer reading lists? Like, hey, you're going over here. Read this guy, this guy, this guy, and maybe these guys, and, you know, go from there. And instead of wasting time flying professors out to teach.
Thanks, Charles.
That background.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Charles. I think that would be a good idea in some respects, but sort of back to what I said earlier is that in a lot of ways, just simply reading history, while that is phenomenal and that is a good thing, a lot of why I'm advocating so hard for humanities is that method of thinking that you get from being a humanities major, it's a little bit different from the method of thinking of a STEM major. And that's, like I said, it's perfectly okay that that's different. We all benefit the Navy in different ways through that. But yeah, I think that a reading list would be phenomenal for that endeavor, and obviously more cost effective than flying professors all the way out. But maybe there is a benefit from having that professor there, that sort of in-person understanding, because it's sort of cold, dead words on a page in one respect, and then the other respect, you have a subject matter expert there to explain to you the intricacies of what you're doing and where you're going. So I guess I could go either way on that. I would have to do some more thinking and research into what exactly that program is. I haven't experienced that myself. But as far as reading lists goes, that sort of triggered in my head a thought that I had the other day when I was talking with one of my friends who is a 16 graduate of the Naval Academy about how we should have a mandatory reading list in some way for Academy graduates. I think that every Academy graduate should be expected to have read things like On War or The Art of War and things along those lines. And maybe that sort of does get back to that war fighting major comment earlier. I mean, I sort of made fun of that sort of idea of a war fighting major, but in a way that's sort of what I'm saying and what we sort of came to in our solution. We were talking about ways to improve the Academy. We sort of came to the conclusion that Academy graduates should have read The Art of War or some form of war studies and philosophy that predates the 20th century. And that is in a large way missing from our curriculum as well. And I think that it would be beneficial to have that. So reading lists, I think, do have their benefits and could be used in the way that you advocated and that I just advocated myself. But I also think that there is benefit, a huge benefit, to having that professor there to teach you the intricacies in a human way and to teach you really how to approach the topic. And this isn't to say that they brainwash you to think about history in a certain way through a certain lens. That's not at all what a history major or history instructors do. They teach you ways to approach it so that you can come up with your own lens and your own understanding of what to do. Because like humans aren't machines. We aren't an equation that you can put in the right X and you get the proper Y out on the other end of the equation, which sort of goes back to this whole emotional intelligence, understanding of backgrounds, understanding of histories that I was talking about earlier. It's not an equation where you plug in book X and you get out quality Y. It's process and it's sort of creating that understanding and creating that leader. So I guess the long and short of it would be that I would need to read a little bit more up on what you're doing and think through it more. But thank you for the question a lot.
One of the questions earlier in our chat room involved whether or not the Naval Academy needs to provide more afloat training for the prospective surface warfare officers. And if so, as I look at that question, if so, how would that work in the context of the time period you have at the Academy?
Yeah, I absolutely would agree that we need more afloat training for Academy graduates. If you look to other navies around the world, excuse me, the Irish Navy is the one I'm most familiar with because of my foreign exchange. Like I said, they spend their entire summer, they have a shorter school year than we do, and then they spend their entire summer at sea on a ship, sort of in an enlisted capacity as naval cadets for 2 years. So they have far more at sea time than our graduates do. But I also think that a major thing that needs to change at the Academy and within the Brigade of Midshipmen is the way that we look at what afloat training we do have. We look at our time in seamanship and navigation courses. We look at our time on YPs as almost, I wouldn't say a joke, but it's something it's something that is not looked forward to by midshipmen going out on the YPs for an afternoon as part of a class. If we could change the culture to more properly reflect what this equipment actually is, this is a United States Navy training vessel that reflects accurately a bridge of a destroyer. And the opportunity for an 18-year-old to take that out as part of a class for college credit and to prepare to be an officer and take that out into the Chesapeake Bay is actually really cool when you think about it. Once again, you got to go back in that vacuum of culture. If we could make a cultural vacuum for a moment and say, hey, as part of your 4 years at the Academy, you'll get to go and drive U.S. Navy training vessels during the school day as part of your college credit. A lot of people would jump at that because that is cool. But somehow at the Academy, we have a midshipman culture, and it's on us to change it where we are dreading this sort of afloat training, at least at the Academy itself. And then I think that maybe a longer summer cruise period where there's more defined roles for midshipmen, because that is what they do in the Irish Navy. The naval cadets of the Irish Navy have a specific job on the ship that they are assigned to do and they're expected to be proficient in for the entirety of their cruise. For our cruises, we do get good situational awareness. My sophomore year, my youngster cruise, as we called it at the Academy, is a massive reason why I decided to go surface warfare and gave me an unreal amount of knowledge and understanding of the Navy itself. It could have been a bit improved, though, if I had a defined job. In fact, it was such a defining experience for me. I actually selected the ship that I did my youngster cruise on as my ship on ship selection night, and I was very excited to do so. So there's just ways that we could maybe, even if we didn't change the current afloat training, if we could tweak the culture a bit, that would improve it. But I do think that a change might be needed right now, especially with some of the recent mishaps that we've seen. But that might also be a culture issue as well. I can't really speak to what's going on in the fleet because I haven't been there, but that's sort of where what I would think whenever you talk about more afloat training.
We spent a fair bit of time on the show talking about the non-STEM part of the equation, and we'll kind of wind things up. I wanted to flip the coin back on you. opportunity to play devil's advocate, per se, for
please do.
What would you say, because I know you've heard plenty of the arguments, what would you say is the most effective argument for a bias in favor of STEM degrees? And is there an argument you hear the pro-STEM bias crew make on a regular basis you think is the least effective argument they're making?
All right, so I'll start with what you started with, the most effective. I would say that the thing that has rung the most true for me is that by gaining that STEM perspective, you can almost have an interdisciplinary understanding that is better, and that's been very true for me. This is actually what I've told people in the conversations in the hall that I've had, is that without a lot of the STEM training that I had, I don't think I would be as good at my major, political science, as I am. My senior research is heavily, heavily math-based, and I don't think that I would have been going down that route last semester when I was conducting my research if I hadn't had that STEM background. And so I do think it's important to have a STEM background. I just think that it is way, way beyond what is necessary to give that sort of interdisciplinary understanding or that idea of competence that you need. And then I would say that the least effective argument is that you need to, quote, be a technical expert, end quote, in the fleet. And that's what a lot of the commenters said as well, that you need to have an understanding of systems and things along those lines. I'm going to auxiliary engineering school as part of my orders after I graduate from the academy, which sort of feeds right back into what I said in the article. While I was benefited to have some STEM background so that when I go to my aux engineering school, I will have a better understanding of what's going on when I hit the ground. I'll hit the ground running. It is still necessary for me to go to aux engineering school and to go through a ton of different sets of circumstances. People in the comment section were acting as if somehow majoring in STEM means that you're automatically competent on understanding main propulsion, air conditioning, potable water, things along those lines on a ship. It's just false. It's totally untrue. You don't need to have been a STEM major to go to nuclear power school. One of my good friends is another political science major heading down to Charleston for nuclear power school. It's just a lot of the technical expert training that happens is done outside of the academy. And I will say that I'm very glad that I had things like Calculus 1 and Calculus 2 to be able to have not a fear of math and a better understanding of the mathematical principles and things along those lines. But I just really think that there are too many classes that are STEM that are STEM classes. It's just well beyond what would be sufficient to give you that technical understanding when you get to the fleet or to be able to hit the ground running as a technical expert. Because I hate to break it to a lot of the commenters, pretty much no one graduating from here is a technical expert yet. We're ready to become one, but I think that we could still be ready to become one even if we took less STEM classes. Like I said, it's almost been a punching bag of mine today, the Lego engineering class where we made basically a Lego bot that batted a ball around. That is not going to really help me in the fleet, just to be honest and to be frank. And that's okay. I did gain something from it. I gained some understanding, but it's not going to help me in the engineering department really. And the technical expertise that is required and that they expect and that they demand isn't imbued here necessarily. And so it's sort of a weird toe in that way that I do acknowledge that there needs to be STEM. That's what's one thing that has been abundantly said and conveyed by me is that I never said there's no need for STEM. I never said STEM is bad. I never said that we should eliminate STEM at the academy. I just said that the current disparity between the two fields is too large and that that gap should be closed a bit for all of our benefit. And that's where I stand.
Well, Kirk, I really appreciate your comments, and I think it's the nice thing about what you did was you kept the dialogue going And a lot of people have responded. Some of those commenters were favorable to you. And, you know, this discussion is going to go on long into your career. And I encourage you to continue to think and to write and to be bold in your thinking and writing. And with that, is there anything we can see coming from you in the near future? And in the meantime, thanks again for appearing on the show. So let us know what's going on with you, and I'll let Sal say the final goodbye.
Yeah, so what's going on for me right now is that I'm going through finals here at the Academy. So I actually, funnily enough, took a break. I use this as an excuse to stop studying some ocean engineering, which I have a final in tomorrow. So I guess what's on my plate is just commissioning, getting through these last few tough finals here at the Academy, and then heading out to my ship. I don't have any particular writing in the works at the moment, but usually it just takes one thing to set me off, and then I'll go and write. It's almost cathartic for me to go and fill up a page. So we'll see what the future holds. As of right now, though, there's nothing on deck for me other than just getting on the deck of my ship, which I'm very excited to do and honored to have the opportunity to do. So thank you very much for hosting me. It's been a great time, a great conversation, and a great excuse from my engineering curriculum. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Kurt. It's been a great pleasure having you. Congrats again on your coming graduation. Good luck with your OceanO exam, and enjoy your first sea tour. Do well and do good at the same time, and we'll keep an eye on you. Keep writing when you get the itch, too. I look forward to reading some more from you.
Maybe I'll write a rebuttal article to my own article in 2 years after I've had the perspective of a fleet tour. I could either do an update and say, hey, I think I was right, or I could come back and say, mea culpa, sorry, everybody. Or mea culpa, sorry, everybody. That's on me. So we'll see. But for now, I'm sticking to my guns. I think that what I said was correct, but I welcome the debate. Thank you so much, Sal.
Perfect. And thank you very much, everybody who joined us today. Hope you have a great upcoming week. And until next time, have a great Navy Day. Cheers.
Molly wrote a neat reply to Irish Paddy O, saying Mike Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the strand.